Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We know there's a lot of things to cover, and I know that everybody is just itching and anxious, frustrated, pissed off. I've been very clear when you look at the ulterior motives, or if you look at the backside of social justice, because I don't want to get into, you know, the problems du jour, the rioting and those types of things. I understand that it's not bad, but these are run-ups. I've said this before. These are run-ups for the Bolshevik Revolution. And as you start recognizing the damage and the actions of all these people, you have to understand the backside or the foundation of social justice. Social justice is nothing more than implementing communism under a different name. Go Google social justice. By Google's definition, it is a redistribution of wealth, outcome, and all. It even goes farther than Marxism. It's not just about the money. It's about law, justice, and everything else. So if you don't recognize the fact that the Bolshevik Revolution is moving forward, the fact that they're actually talking about disbanding, defunding, that there's places that are looking to, you know, get the police out of business, that's exactly what the Bolshevik Revolution did. They're following the exact same tactics. America, you know, it's not just about waking up. You better get involved in the solution. The only solution is demanding full compliance to the Constitution. Every public servant that takes an oath is legally obligated to support the Constitution, not some agenda. If it's not within the Constitution, then they better be advocating for an amendment to the Constitution to follow the process. That is the only thing that they should be doing. If they feel like there's something wrong with the Constitution, the only process is to submit an amendment to the Constitution and have it passed by 2/3 of both houses, then submit that to the owners of the Constitution, which are the states. That's it. Any other mechanism is rebellion against the Constitution, and any of these public servants who think they can get away with rebellion, people, you need to wake up. This is tantamount to the Civil War, except instead of splitting the states, it is to completely annihilate our Constitution and move us into a statist government, because government knows better than we do. So anyway, I do have a lot to go through. What we're going to go through today are Jefferson's Kentucky Resolutions of 1799. Okay, so in the backstory, well, actually, the one thing you also need to know behind all of this is that this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. Thought I'd forget again, didn't you? Anyway, so the Jefferson's Kentucky Resolutions, the first one went out and basically stated what needed to happen. When the other states, first off, Virginia stood up because it was Madison, and they were, in honesty, they were working together to create this domino effect of this, you know, rising emotion against the violation of our Constitution. This is what we need to be doing today. And God help us if all of a sudden I and other patriots start writing letters and resolutions such as this, as you see today, that I'm going to read Jefferson's 1799 resolution, because this is clearly a waving of the white flag of not getting, not pursuing the states to do their job. And it forced Jefferson and Madison, as I've said before, to take a different tact. What they did was they actually and successfully created a political revolution, and they unseated the Federalists. Now, we can't do that today because we don't have a Jefferson. Donald Trump is not a Thomas Jefferson. He may have a populist, you know, appeal, and he may be popular, but he is not going to provide the revolution necessary. I dare think that any of the candidates or any of those who could rise up to the top to get to that level, even the popular entertainers, I don't trust. If it was Mark Levin, Glenn Beck, Bill O'Reilly, Rush Limbaugh, I don't care. You name it. Sean Hannity, I don't care. None of those men are capable of doing what needs to be done because they don't understand the Constitution. Yes, I said that. Mark Levin does not understand the Constitution. If he did, he would have been advocating that the National Guard be disbanded and advocating for the reenactment and the restoration of the militia and their role within the Republic. Okay, we've traveled 200 years. Responsibilities may be a little bit greater. Compensation may need to be in the picture and some of these other things. But if what we're spending on the National Guard, are you kidding me? I can't even fathom why anybody would want to think that those mercenaries, and you know, I know that there's people in there that are patriots and they're doing great things, but they need to be in the militia getting paid similar type of stuff, but they should be focused on supporting the Constitution because the militia's role is to enforce and support the Constitution. The National Guard's role is to support the federal government and the orders of the federal government, whether they be for their own protecting their protesters and this other crap. Anyway, like I said, I don't want to get into time-bound stuff. This is really all about saving the Republic. And this is why we go through this content. We will be giving you some marketing as soon as we wrap up these resolutions. I may have an interview or two to throw in, but we will be getting into marketing. Because why? Because I use marketing to poke you in the eye to say, what's it going to take? You know, all this crap that you see in the news, it is a distraction because as long as you sit there fixated on these problems, you're not doing anything to solve them. What we have to do is we have to understand what we need to do. We have to understand the foundation of why things are the way they are. And that way we can go back and restore these things and use the tools necessary. As a matter of fact, just like Madison and Jefferson in 1798, the Republic Review is the exact same process. It is getting state legislatures to make resolutions to declare that they're going to first audit the Constitution and then do exactly like Jefferson and audit the Constitution and identify every violation from the federal government, not just these laws, not just these powers being exercised, but by their exertion into things they have no jurisdiction, such as the Supreme Court making edicts, rules, and so forth that they had no jurisdiction over. What is that? What are those things that they have no jurisdiction over? Well, marriage is one of those things. Life is another one of those things. I mean, they have no jurisdiction over what is air and the environment. I want to be clear here, folks. As much as you think that they've been doing some kind of good things, they have no jurisdiction. Whenever you surrender jurisdiction to the federal government, they use it as a weapon. And if you don't believe me, look at how the EPA has gone after people. There was a good gentleman in the Rockies areas. I don't know if it's Colorado or Wyoming. I think it was Wyoming where this guy built his own farm, his own fish farm, so that he could fish his own little pond, like a mini lake. He did all the due diligence. And it's the same thing throughout the states. The EPA has exerted all sorts of unconstitutional powers. And so as soon as they get their foot in the door, it's like the camel's nose in the tent. We have to stop. We have to slap that nose, get that nose out of the tent, and get the federal government into compliance. And the only, I want to be very clear, because I just talked to a leader of the sheriff movement, and the only method of getting the federal government into full compliance is for the state legislatures to assert their constitutional authority over that constitution and to dictate to the federal government what they need to do. And if they don't, Congress in the general government, the legislatures in the general government will suffer the consequences. They will be removed. If they are so treasonous, they will be hanged, I should say. And they will be replaced by people who understand that they have limited powers, and that they have to abide by the Constitution and their legal oath of office. This is why Section 3 is a complete godsend, and nobody has even recognized this. Well, I can't say nobody. There are more and more people that are listening and starting to recognize, wow, this Section 3 is really a godsend. Interesting. It's nice to be able to have afterthoughts and what do they call that? Four epiphanies? Anyway, when we get back, we're going to be going into break. I will jump straight into these resolutions of 1799. So please stay tuned. And we're going to show you exactly how Jefferson felt when the other states failed to do their job. These are the words of Jefferson. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in, and let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so this is the real inside view of Jefferson's feelings regarding their fellow or sister states' response. And this was approved December 3rd, 1799 by the Kentucky Assembly. And these are the resolutions in General Assembly. The representatives of the good people of this Commonwealth in General Assembly convened, having maturely considered the answers of sundry states in the Union, a variety, sundry is a variety, of states in the union to their resolutions passed at the last session respecting certain unconstitutional laws of Congress, commonly called the Alien and Sedition Laws, would be faithless indeed to themselves and to those they represent. Were they silently to acquiesce in principles and doctrines attempted to be maintained in all those answers, that of Virginia only accepted. Accepted is not A-C-C-E-X-C-E-P-T-E-D, accepted. In other words, the exception. So I have to do this because the words they use are different than how you'd expect somebody to say this today. Anyway, to again enter the field of argument and attempt more fully or forcibly to expose the unconstitutionality of those obnoxious laws would, it is as apprehended, be as unnecessary as unveiling. Now, right here, I want you, why does he say these words to start off? We cannot, however, but lament, comma. What does that mean? What does that mean, lament? Well, crying, lamentation, to weep, to howl, wailing. It's not an expression of happiness. It's not an expression of glee. It is a very outward emotion of somebody being very upset. We cannot, however, lament that in the discussion of those interesting subjects by a variety of legislatures of our sister states, unfounded suggestions and uncandid insinuations derogatory of the true character and principle of the good people of this commonwealth have been substituted in place of fair reasoning and sound judgment. Wow. Here he just pointed out that these other states that failed, there was, I think, 15, so that was 13 states, I believe. 13 states that sat on their hands or deliberately did nothing and actually insinuated that they were just being rebel rousers. Come on. I mean, you know, we see the federal government, this experiment moving forward is a good thing. Our opinions of those alarming measures of the general government together with our reasons for those opinions were detailed with decency and with temper and submitted to the discussion and judgment of our fellow citizens throughout the Union. Whether the decency and temper have been observed in the answers of most of those states who have denied or attempted to obviate the great truths contained in those resolutions, we have now only to submit to a candid world. Faithful to the true principles of the Federal Union, unconscious of any designs to disturb the harmony of that union, and anxious only to escape the fangs of despotism, the good people of this commonwealth are regardless of censure or calumniation. And, you know, what the heck does calumniation mean? Well, let me see here. Pull up a synonym. I'd have to look it up because it's one of those archaic words that I never use. I'll have to look it up and I'll give it to you after the break. So what we'll do is we'll just capture that. Okay. Least, however, the silence of this commonwealth would be construed into acquiescence in the doctrines and principles advanced and attempted to be maintained by the said answers, or at least those of our fellow citizens throughout the Union, who so widely differ from us on those important subjects, should be deluded by the expectation that we shall be deterred from what we convince our duty or shrink the principles contained in those resolutions. Therefore, does this sound like, you know, at any in any way Jefferson is thinking that the other states' reactions is anything other than just deplorable. If you start understanding the history and the course of events that happened from 1798 to 1800, unseating a sitting president, John Adams, who was a founder, or I should say a framer. I mean, John Adams had a big role in establishing his paper on the Republic, Anything But a Republic. I forget the name of the paper, but it basically said that there is no other argument. We must have a republic. It must be a republic. That actually, and a lot of people looked at that because it was a very lengthy paper, and maybe he just repeated his arguments to make it lengthy, but there were a lot of people that looked at his work and said, it's kind of wordy, but he's right. Nevertheless, John Adams was not anything like somebody that was necessarily grinding a contrary doctrine like Obama, Clinton, Johnson, FDR, Wilson, and so forth. I mean, I could just keep going. I want you to understand, this was the very beginning when everybody was still living by the same principles. And now here Jefferson points out that the government is egregiously violating the Constitution, sent out these resolutions, and now you're hearing his response. I've not had access. I've never read these other states' responses. I would love to. I'd love to be able to can all of this into a 1 month's content for you. But I'm here to tell you that his response, I think, gives you the full insight of the problem of their day when the Federalists felt that centralizing powers and allowing the federal government to violate the Constitution, a man like Thomas Jefferson said, no more. We need to stop, and Madison called it arrest the evil progress. Okay, so least, however, the silence of this commonwealth should be construed into acquiescence in the doctrines, principles advanced, attempted to be maintained by the said answers, or at least those of our fellow citizens throughout the Union, who so widely differ from us on those important subjects, should be deluded by the expectation that we have deterred from what we conceive our duty, or shrink from the principles contained in those resolutions. Therefore, the fourth resolution, resolved that this Commonwealth considers the Federal Union upon the terms and for the purposes specified in the late compact as conducive to the liberty and happiness of the several states, that it does now unequivocally declare its attachment to the Union and to that compact agreeable to its obvious and real intention, and will be among the last to seek its dissolution, that if those who administer the general government be permitted to transgress the limits fixed by that compact, by a total disregard to the special delegations of power therein contained, annihilation of the state governments, and the erection upon their ruins of a general consolidated government will be the inevitable consequence. Wow. I mean, here he's saying we want to be a part of this union. We have an affection. We believe that this union is greater than our own state. You know, the sum of the parts is far greater than its total. Anyway, here he's stating that if we allow them to violate this, that they will utterly destroy the state sovereignty and the state powers, and they will end up centralizing all powers under themselves, and the consequences of that would be despotism. He goes on and says that the principle and construction contended for a sundry of the state legislatures, that the general government is the exclusive judge of the extent of the powers delegated to it, stop nothing short of despotism. Now, one of the things that, because I want to be clear here, because Thomas Jefferson wasn't at the ratification debates, And I don't think, you got to understand that the contract law was not that mature in those days. You know, they all understood a contract by a handshake, you know, everybody honored what they said and so forth. And this was a huge handshake because usually you know, you kind of have a handshake to some simple terms that you agree to. Okay, boom. And then people delivered. This was a monumental agreement. It was a monumental handshake, and it was a very difficult one. But they did not think, they did not even imagine to place the compact into, and actually at that point, elevate contract law to maturity to ensure that every piece of the compact, they just kind of left it to the nobility of noble men. And that was truly the greatest error. But I truly believe we've got other blessings in there, but we're going to run out of time. We'll be right back.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TALK-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so what is calumniation? And the Webster Dictionary says it's to utter maliciously false statements, charges, or impugnations about one's character, to injure the reputation with calumny. And so, as putting this into context, I will read how that was used. Faithful to the true principles of the Federal Union, unconscious of any designs to disturb the harmony of that union, and anxious only to escape the fangs of despotism, the good people of this Commonwealth are regardless of censure or calumniate or calumniation. And so, in other words, he's basically saying that they're not trying to, you know, maliciously make false statements. Anyway, moving on, and let me just kind of back out to where we were with the fourth resolution. That if those who administer the general government be permitted to transgress the limits fixed by that compact by a total disregard to the special delegations of power therein contained, annihilation of the state governments, and the erection upon their ruins of a general consolidated government will be the inevitable consequence. That the principle and construction contended for by sundry of state legislatures, a variety of the state legislatures, that the general government is the exclusive judge of the extent of the powers delegated to it, stop nothing short of despotism. And this is where I say Thomas Jefferson should have referred back to the ratification debates, that during the ratification debates, it was never stipulated that the federal government was the final judge of all things. That they, and go back to John Marshall's words, that if it is not a power that is enumerated, or if it is a power that is restricted, they are, you know, any laws that are under those circumstances, in other words, they violate the Bill of Rights, or they're not a power within the enumerated powers, then the court systems are to actually nullify and make those laws void. They're to be wiped off the books. That's exactly what should have happened by the Supreme Court. And this goes to show you how the court's paradigm was at that point in time. There were already enough people sitting on the court to actually take a stand in helping grow the federal government and its roles, responsibilities, and powers. This is why there are very few cases, unless it was really a big deal, there were very few cases when the government had the opportunity presented to it not to grow and not to, you know, build upon or usurp its roles, responsibilities, and powers. Very few times did they actually do the right thing. A great case in point was Marbury v. Madison, and how Marshall himself actually took the opportunity to help grow the bench's reach. Anyway, let me move on. That the principle and construction contended by for a variety of the state legislatures that the general government is the exclusive judge of the extent of the powers delegated to it stop at nothing short of despotism. Since the discretion of those who administer the government and not the Constitution would be the measure of powers, that the several states who formed that instrument, being sovereign and independent, have the unquestionable right of judge of its infractions, and that nullification by those sovereignties of all unauthorized acts done under color of that instrument is the rightful remedy. Now, he's saying the nullification, but he's also... and so they did nullify, but you have to understand that he was successful in nullifying, but they didn't get the other states to join in. Had this been the Department of Transportation, had this been the Department of Environmental Protection or what have you, he would have been very clear that they would have had to go and arrest and go in and interpose. Moving on, he says that this commonwealth does upon the most deliberate reconsideration declare that the said alien and sedition laws are, in their opinion, palpable or blatant violations of the said Constitution, and however cheerful it may be disposed to surrender its opinion to a majority of its sister states in matters of ordinary or doubtful policy, yet in momentous regulations like the present, which so vitally would be the best rights of the citizens, it would consider the silent acquiescence as highly criminal. So where do they go? What do they do from there? I mean, he literally just called out these state legislatures as being, you know, criminally culpable, or they have blood on their hands. Bottom line, I'll just put it that way. He basically just said, hey, you guys have blood on your hands. That although this commonwealth, as a party to the federal compact, will bow to the laws of the union, yet it does at the same time declare that it will not now nor ever have hereafter cease to oppose in a constitutional manner every attempt from what quarter soever offered to violate that compact. So who's he talking about? He's talking about this state, the state of Kentucky, you know, is even regardless of how egregious they are, he was basically seeking that from whatever court or so ever, they're not going to violate the compact. And finally, in order that no pretext or arguments may be drawn from a supposed acquiescence on the part of this Commonwealth in the constitutionality of those laws and be thereby used as precedents for similar future violations of the federal compact, this Commonwealth does now enter against them its solemn protest. And so here he basically draws the line that we are standing here in protest of these laws. And I believe that Kentucky and Virginia maintained their position that they didn't enforce those laws. But the intent was, and I think Madison was really far clearer than Jefferson was, that they wanted to make sure that the federal government remained within the bounds of the Constitution and that they couldn't go beyond. Now, so here's the interesting thing. Madison, when he writes, he doesn't just respond like Jefferson does. I mean, Jefferson doesn't waste any time. He actually jumps out there and says, okay, this is what we're going to do. And actually, when was this done? This was approved at the very end of 1799. So the following year. So if you think about it, when they realized that they didn't have anything, they had less than a year's time to conduct a coup or to conduct their political revolution, because this went out in December 1799. Sometime probably before this, Madison and Jefferson were already talking about creating a party and taking back, you know, the essence of the Constitution and occupying the seats of government to honor the Constitution. So Madison, he ends up writing, and his was in January, so it was a little bit later, but it was 1800. So his was a month later after the fact. And instead of doing it as a formal resolution, this was James Madison's report on the Virginia resolutions. And so it was to the House of Delegates, session of 1799-1800. Report of the committee to whom were referred the communications of various states relative to the resolutions of the last General Assembly of this state concerning the alien and sedition laws. Whatever room might be found in the proceedings of some of the states who have disapproved of the resolutions of the General Assembly of this Commonwealth passed on the 21st day of December for painful remarks on the spirit and manner of those proceedings, it appears to the committee most consistent with the duty as well as dignity of the General Assemblies to hasten an oblivion of every circumstance which might be construed into a diminution of mutual respect, confidence, and affection among the members of the Union. So in other words, we got to, you know, hurry up and act because we see a marginalization, a diminution. And what he's talking about there is a reduction in the, you know, in their rights, their sovereignty, a reduction in their powers and of mutual respect, confidence, and affection among the members of the Union. The committee, going on, he says, the committee have deemed it a more useful task to revise with a critical eye the resolutions which have met with disapprobation to examine fully the several objections and arguments which have appeared against them and to inquire whether they can be any errors of fact, of principle, or of reason, which the candor of the General Assembly ought to acknowledge and correct. There we go. Perfect timing. And this way I won't have to bleed into the next, into the promo. So we will be right back after these promos, folks. So please stay tuned. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. The show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so I'll do everything I can to try to not get my tongue tied with some of these words, because unequivocally is a difficult word to read. Anyway, because most people just don't say these types of words. But anyway, getting back to Madison's response or report on the resolutions, he says, the first of the resolutions is in the words following, quote, resolved that the General Assembly of Virginia doth unequivocally express a firm resolution to maintain and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of this state against every aggression, either foreign and or domestic, and that they will support the government of the United States in all measures warranted by the former. Close quote. No unfavorable comment can be made on the sentiments here expressed. Apparently, some of the states did. To maintain the defend the Constitution of the United States and their own state against every aggression, both foreign and domestic, and to support the government of the United States in all measures warranted by the Constitution are duties which the General Assembly ought always to feel, and to which on such an occasion it was evidently proper to express their sincere and firm adherence. So I want you to understand this, because I've had this a recent discussion, you know, who has the responsibility? I've heard from people that, oh, well, the sheriffs have this responsibility, the importance of constitutional sheriffs. I'm sorry, friends. And let me just take a second here to wander a little bit on this. What are we addressing? What is the real problem? Is the problem the enforcement of the laws? Yeah, well, that is kind of a part of the problem. But that's actually a symptom of the problem. So if you look at a systemic problem, there is usually the root to this systemic problem. When we look at the enforcement of this law or that law at the county, and it's great when county sheriffs actually stand up and enforce a law, but are they standing up and enforcing all the laws? Because I can give you cases in point where there's a county sheriff that'll stand up and maybe shut down the BLM or maybe shut down the EPA, but they're not shutting down all the rest of the unconstitutional government. They're only shutting down the one. Now, it would be great to see sheriffs actually say, federal jurisdiction, there is nothing in the Constitution to grant the federal government to enforce or create jurisdiction of enforcement in any of the states. Therefore, the federal government shouldn't have the U.S. Department of Forestry. They shouldn't have the FBI. They shouldn't have the IRS. They should have no offices and buildings of enforcement. Those are not necessary and needful buildings within the framework of the Constitution and their enumerated powers. They don't have the authority to do that. And therefore, I'd love to see that all the sheriffs just enforce it. But does that create constitutional compliance? Okay, so you have one or a few counties in a particular state that are actually enforcing the laws and enforcing the Constitution. Does that dismantle the breakneck speed that the federal government is spending on all these unconstitutional powers? Heck no. That's why it is not a solution. It is only treating a symptom, the unconstitutional enforcement by the federal government of unconstitutional laws. That's only a symptom of the problem. The real problem is that the federal government is not in compliance to the Constitution. So don't tell me that somebody is solving the problem by just fighting the symptoms and treating a symptom. The only way we solve this problem is just as Madison and Jefferson have been saying. We have to get the state legislatures to stand up. This is why they are the greatest sovereigns within this republic to save us. And when I say sovereigns, don't come to me and say the people are the ultimate sovereigns, because that's incorrect. Ultimately, the people, when it comes to government, are the sovereigns. But when you want to generalize who the ultimate sovereign is, it's got to be our creator. It's got to be the divine hand of providence. Let's actually start putting things into context. We are sovereigns. However, in our government, we have removed ourselves as the ultimate sovereigns of all things politically. We have created constitutions and delegating power to those who govern, our legislators. And technically, who are the sovereigns at the county? Anybody that says sheriff does not understand the county architecture. The sovereigns in the county are the county commissioners. They're the ones who have the authority by the people to create laws and govern them. The sheriff's responsibility is only to execute and enforce those laws, as well as, you know, going that extra mile of enforcing the Constitution. I have been a huge advocate that we need to change the county structure, but I mean, let's fix the real problem here first, folks. I believe counties should actually have an executive instead of putting that responsibility onto the sheriff, because the sheriff really is the enforcer of the laws. He's kind of like the DOJ or something of that national level. You know, we're going to enforce these things. The executive would then be the person that kind of sits over that. And though we think that may be the sheriff, that is not the only role of the executive. If you look at the executive level, we also need an executive at the county level to ensure that working commerce between the states, working infrastructure and other state interests, kind of like a governor, but we need to have somebody at the county level who is creating the collaboration, cooperation, and even trying to help build the economy of the county. It shouldn't be the president's job to, you know, and or the federal government's job to help build the economy. That should be the visionary of the county to be basically say, you know, we need to start making, you know, bringing a couple of different businesses in here will give us the innate resources necessary to take us in this direction. And when you really start looking at planning, those are the types of things county executives would actually be able to do, where the county commissioners sometimes lack that. they don't understand, well, you know what? We don't have any tech companies. This is why, you know, some of these dark red counties, they're not looking at how they can appeal to the necessary building blocks. And a great case in point, folks, and I'm sorry for going on this divergence, but if you look at Wyoming and the Dakotas, where all of a sudden they had a boon because there was big business going in for fracking and extracting oil, and they're probably firing on all cylinders right now, considering the cost of oil. I'm here to tell you that the necessary structure just didn't exist in those areas. And so the county commissioners were only being responsive. But had they had an executive in those counties where these companies were coming in to function and operate so that they could have the broadband and these other things necessary, they would have been able to actually not just, you know, provide this necessary support, but they would actually be able to start creating the necessary infrastructure from the IT perspective, from supplies, food, you know, housing, and all those other things to actually accommodate the growth of that business. Because if all of a sudden it became more affordable for somebody to actually live there and it wasn't such a hardship, companies wouldn't have to be paying guys unreasonable amounts of money to drive trucks. You remember this concept of supply and demand? When you don't have anybody in there that has the ability to do certain skills like driving a truck, you end up having to pay a lot of money. And that's great for the guy receiving that money. But come on, though, it elevates the overall labor, and it's hard. It's bad for the economy to do those types of things. What we want is we want to be able to provide adequate types of services so that the companies can actually thrive. Because what happens when all of a sudden too many people are extrapolating too much money? Well, next thing you know, that company needs to be able to sell the fracking oil at $50 a barrel or greater because they won't make any money because it costs them too much to operate. And so it doesn't cost anything in Saudi Arabia to operate, you know, or to be doing the drilling and so forth. So you have to be able to recognize the need of bringing down the cost of business. And the way to do that is having that visionary. So I'm just creating this argument, and I know I went down this tangent, but I want you to really think, you know, are your counties actually functioning on all cylinders, or because they don't have, I believe, the proper structure governmentally to actually help the people in their county? And I'm just not a bad or a poke at sheriffs, but sheriffs have a big job as well. And as a matter of fact, they have a responsibility to be working with the militia. They shouldn't be working with all the other counties and corporations and doing those types of things. This is why there needs to be a separation for an executive and allowing the sheriff to be able to focus so that he's full time on that instead of trying to build an empire like they have in Spokane County. Well, anyway, folks, we're out of time. So when we come back in our next episode, we will be going back into Madison's comments and we will hopefully wrap this up. And I hope you're starting to understand the importance of these resolutions and the paradigm that we need to adjust to. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic and we need your help. God bless.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcasts and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.